The gurus of How To are here, Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. It's always a pleasure to see you, fellas.
Center.
Ditto.
Brooklyn, New York, center of the universe.
And when the U. Bells visit us, we take your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. People are already leaving comments.
I like that show page. That is really great. Because I like you read the questions, actually.
And we get a lot of comments after you visit us, and that's nice, too.
Mm-hmm. I hope they're nice.
And to all those people I answered last month, you're welcome. And to all those I didn't, sorry.
We actually, before we go on to other things, follow up to the last segment. Jennifer from New York City writes, "We have lead paint on our windowsills in two rooms. I need to get rid of it as we have a baby now, but I'm not sure what the best and safest way to do that is. Can you please advise?"
Yes. First of all, you have to get yourself a painting contractor who is EPA certified to do lead removal. And there's either one of two things. Either you strip it off, which causes a lot of problems, or you replace the windowsill. And what they do is they actually remove the windowsill and the window casings, and they replace them with new. Because
when you strip it, you're still freeing some lead?
Well, you're not really worried about lead in the air, because lead is one of the heaviest elements on Earth. So it all falls to the floor anyway.
Then the baby crawls?
You're going to clean up after you do that kind of thing. But I don't know if you're ever going to get all the lead out of it, because lead was used exclusively in paint since the beginning of time. And it only stopped in New York City in 1960 and stopped nationwide in 1970. And it's still 1978. But 1977, all the lead manufacturers dropped the prices of their lead paint so they could sell it. The law said you couldn't sell it, but they didn't say you couldn't use it. So lead was going into buildings probably into the 80s. So dates of buildings do not give you a clear delineation of lead or no lead. But as far as she's concerned, you got to get an EPA certified painter, contractor, and have it. And I would have it removed, all those windowsills, because those are what we call chewing surfaces. There are three types of surfaces: impact surfaces that you bang up against, friction surfaces like doors rubbing against the door jams, and chewable surfaces,
which babies like to teeth on.
Exactly, and that's why it's such a big deal. And sometimes it's very difficult to find where.
Alvin.
Yeah, but there's also.
He said this goes back to the beginning of time, and so do you. Do you remember? Do you remember when lead?
I'm an old geezer.
Do you remember when lead was just part of the normal thing?
Yes, it was.
Especially in what you do?
Yeah, that's what I just about to bring up, what Lawrence alluded to, is that it wasn't against the law to use the paint, but it was against the law for manufacturers to sell it. But a lot of the storekeepers, hardware stores and paint stores, had a whole stock of this lead paint to this day. And every so often, they sell it on sale. So you got to be very careful if the label is very, very old or something like that.
But going back to the beginning of time, it goes back to the Egyptians used lead in paint and in their ceramics.
In cosmetics.
And ceramics. Obviously, they say it's a downfall of the Roman Empire.
They use lead pipes,
lead pates, lead pans, lead cups. Everything. So
when I first started doing the show, we did any number of segments on some ceramics that had been discovered to have not been heated to the right temperature, and so there was still some lead on them. Mm-hmm. You really have to be careful when you buy ceramics.
Yeah, but going back to the Roman Empire, the goblets that they used to use, they're made out of lead. The reason for that was that the lead has a nice taste to it.
They used to store wine in lead canisters.
Well, actually,
as well,
they would use lead actually as spice on food to change the. Because I'm an EPA EPA lead inspector and assessor, and part of the course is history of lead, and they actually would use it to enhance the flavor of food.
It was a spice.
Yes. So I mean, what we were using it
not
for,
such a nice spice.
Not nice.
Well, but it was good when they got the lead out.
But it is very important. It also is very important that people who have a lead who have copper pipes that were put in before the 80s or have a lead water main, that they make sure that they flush their water out before they use it for cooking or drinking, and never use hot water for cooking or drinking. Generally, you say once the water runs to it's as cold as possible, the amount of lead oxide in that water will be minimal, but the first draw of the day is going to be very high.
My guests are the gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we will be taking your calls at 212-433-9692. In just a moment, I want to get to those calls. Is there anything you want to say about spring before we get to the calls and get to the quiz, today's quiz?
We have the quiz, but as far as the general spring cleaning, this is a good time of the year to clean the gutters and leaders, especially right now, because April showers right now is going to overflow the gutters and leaders. But if on a good day, you can go up there and clean out the leaves and everything else.
And you can use those leaves and put it on your garden and get the Mayflowers.
That's good mulch, by the way. The gutters and leaders that you clean out, if you use that as mulch. And the best way to use mulch, by the way, is to actually find a spot in your garden where the flowers are and dig a hole where there is no flowers and then bury the mulch down deep and then cover it over. This will cause the mulch to ferment at a more rapid pace.
And then do you dig it up again or just...
Well, no, you just leave it there.
Does it enrich the soil?
It'll actually, if you homogenize it with the other soil and everything else, it becomes part of the soil in maybe the following year, and the earth around that area will be more fertile for your new flowers, bulbs, and what have you.
But also, you got to remember that also this New York Sanitation Department also has free mulch giveaways, and you should look on their website. I picked up some mulch from my father who does his rose thing, and so I went with the truck and picked up a bunch of mulch, and it's all free, and it's great, and they want to get rid of it.
When I was a kid, everything with CH at the end was pronounced ch, so I always thought it was mulch. Should we give out today's quiz question?
I can't wait to get my Streitz Musta.
We have some for you here.
Okay.
Mr. Streitz brought it.
I know, I was listening.
Yes.
That was very nice of him. That was not, he didn't have to.
Well, do you know the thing about the boxer breaking along the perforations?
Yeah.
And the rabbi comes along about a problem they're having on an airplane, that the wings keep breaking off, and he tells them to drill holes right where it is, and it'll never break off at the holes.
Just like that matzah. Okay, well, the question for this month is, what is the name the porcupine-looking drum roller used in construction to compact loose surface clay, soil, or fill? It's the sort of thing we see on one of those. It looks like a... what is that?
It looks like a rowing pin with an acne problem.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's attached to a machine, right?
Yeah.
Well, it is a machine. This kind of a roller that looks like a porcupine really could be even hand-pulled, or it's usually like a bulldozer. It's dragged around. And if it's a very big job, they even have like almost a derrick pulling these things around in order to compact the soil. It's a very interesting device.
Okay, if you know the answer, the phone number here is 212-433-9692. Let's get right to our first caller, and it is Ingrid from the Upper West Side. Hi, Ingrid.
Hi.
Hi. I'm so excited to talk with you and the Ubells. I listen all the time.
You're beside yourself, huh?
I am. And I have a longstanding question about my oak parquet floors.
Shoot.
I live on the Upper West Side, and it's an old building, and I've been told I wanted to have them done professionally, and the floor guy that came in said, too fragile, it can't be sanded down anymore, it's just too thin, and he said I had to clean it by using very hot towels and laying them down and carefully, getting up as much dirt as I could.
Well, there it is quite possible that the parquet that is down there for many, many years has been scraped several times and has scraped it down to very thin sections.
Yes.
And then it could be very difficult to repair the parquet. But there are people that do parquet repair.
Hot towel sounds weird to me.
Well, when I was
sounds
younger,
like a sauna.
Well, when I was younger as a cabinet maker, I used to do parquet floors and actually do the inlaying and everything else like that. That was a lot of fun until I got tired of it.
It was real great. It was real great, and I really enjoyed it until I stopped enjoying it.
That's what happens. It becomes monotonous after a while. But that being said, instead of scraping the floors, there are people that have what they call buffers, and it's buffing wheels that they can put on the floor and use steel wool instead of sandpaper. And they use and they put a certain wax into the steel wool pads, and that cleans the floor and it polishes it at the same time.
And the steel wool doesn't scrape off the top?
It takes off so little that it won't harm the floor and even make the floor better than it was before. And those pieces that are loose, maybe you could use some what they call polyvinyl glue. That's the white Elmer's glue, sort of. Then you put that down and you press
Elmer's
it down.
Elmer's glue for wood?
Yes.
That's what it's designed for, actually.
That's what it's designed for. And it doesn't matter if you buy, they'll have signs up that say this is carpenter's glue and this is regular glue. It's all the same glue.
Different colors.
They're just different colors, and they charge you more for the carpenter's glue, but the white glue that is nice and white is the same, does the same job.
And if you wipe it clean, you don't know the difference.
You don't know the difference. It wipes clean with warm water, and it fills in all the cracks. But that buffing wheel, you doing that with whatever compound they use, you'll have a fantastic new floor.
Thank you, Ingrid.
Think it's something I could do myself?
That's going to be difficult.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're very much welcome.
Bye-bye.
And we're going to take a little break. We'll come back with more from the gurus of how to, Al and Larry Ubell. Our number here again, 212-433-9692. Maybe you know the answer to the quiz.
Win a book. Win a book.
I didn't.
No.
I looked at, I mean, I have the answer right in front of me, and I'm still not sure of the answer.
And it still doesn't help you.
No. He cheats all the time.
I'd like to invite you to our next free film screening. Our projection series returns with a look at Depression-era musicals. And next Tuesday, April 14th, we'll be watching the classic film Gold Diggers of 1933 with choreography from Busby Berkeley. And that's at the Galapagos Art Space in Brooklyn. Seating is limited. For more information and to RSVP, visit our show page at WNYC.org. And don't forget to check out our video section when you go there and take a peek inside our studios with guests like Kevin Spacey and Jessica Hines, Michael Caine, Nelson George. Just click on video pics on our show page at WNYC.org. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Back with the gurus of how to, Al and Larry Ubell. I switch it around sometimes. I say Alvin and Lauren. Sometimes I say Al and Larry. Do you have preferences?
No.
Never. As long as you don't call us anything else.
Okay. Leonard, I have to read this on the air because the guy's name is Leonard, which means he's of a certain generation, right? Mm-hmm. Does anybody get named Leonard anymore?
Alvin has disappeared totally.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I don't even know too many Lennies other than you and some relatives, but no, not too many young Leonards.
Yeah. Leonard in New York writes, I remodeled my bathroom 2 years ago. Recently, it just dawned on me that the contractor only had grouted without putting caulking around the bathtub and the wall around it. We asked our architect, and he said caulking is not always necessary. Is that true? And if not, is it too late to put in the caulking now?
Well, it depends upon how it looks. Actually, if the tub is so designed that the tile goes inside of a lip that the tub has all the way around where the tile is, so it really, even if it is no caulking or grout at that section, it probably will not leak if the rest of the tile was done properly. But it's usually unsightly because it looks like a dark mark all the way around. And what I would prefer a person to use is this acrylic cork, which is very easy to put on. You could buy it in any hardware store or home center. And you put this acrylic white cork or whatever color you have. They have about four or five different colors. And then you wipe it off with a soft sponge, a wet soft sponge, until you get a nice even bead. And it really comes out very well. Leave it alone overnight, and it'll be terrific.
The only place that I recommend that the cork go in, that if he hasn't done already, is also the corners. Sometimes the corners crack and open up, and so because of expansion, contraction of the wall framing, some of the underlayment, and
or they didn't do it right. Yeah, what happens is if they don't fasten the intersection corners on the inside before they put the base sheets on, what happens is the corners open up. And this is a big problem with the carpenters or the installers. Mm-hmm. Those inside corners and even the outside corners have to be really rigidly secured so the corners don't open up, particularly with tile work.
Let's take another call. Mm-hmm. Donald from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
I don't know if this question has an answer or not, but...
No, go for it.
I think everyone knows that refrigerators are the main culprit for using up electricity in the homes.
It's one of the big ones.
Yeah, because it runs day and night.
It runs day and night.
Yeah, the name of energy conservation, by the way, since you just stepped on that, is duration is the most important thing. It's how, not that a light bulb uses up 100 or 150 watts of electricity, but how long you leave the lights on or something like that. In other words, if you accidentally leave the lights on and then you go to work, 8 hours, it's burning, it's not doing anything, that's where you're wasting electricity.
Anyway, what's your question? Go ahead.
The question is, how can we get our refrigerators to use less energy other than using the thermostat?
A couple of things. One is obviously using the thermostat, lowering the raising the temperature, but also, you know, keeping the door closed as often as possible. The less you open the door, the less recovery time there takes, so the more downtime there is with the compressor. And actually, the refrigerator isn't really on all the time. It's actually cycles on and off, and if you can reduce that cycle. Also, making sure that the coils on the back of the or under the refrigerator, depending on where they are clean will make it work better. And also that the gasket around the door is tight. And the easy way to check that is with a dollar bill. You put the dollar bill in the gasket, and if it pulls out relatively easily, you know you have a loose gasket. If it's difficult to get out, or you actually see gaps where you could see marks on it. Also, you should clean that gasket often. It's one of the biggest sources of mold in homes because it's always getting cold and sweating, and there's always food and other biological material there that is also conducive to that type of. But those are the things that you can do. Also, the newer units are obviously better insulated, and they keep that cycle, that on-off cycle, shorter.
The other thing that you can do is if you buy two refrigerator thermometers, and you could put one in the freezing compartment, one in the food compartment, and if the freezing compartment is below 0 degrees Fahrenheit, that is, you can raise the temperature ever so slightly.
And that'll save you energy?
That'll save a lot of energy. For every degree you lower you raise the temperature in a refrigerator, you save 2 to 3% of the energy bill that the refrigerator is consuming. That goes also with the food compartment. It should be at 40 degrees. That's the right temperature for fresh food. And if it is below 40 degrees, you're actually freezing the lettuce or making things you're actually dehydrating the food that you have in that compartment, because the colder it is, the more water comes out. So monitor those temperatures, which new, very modern refrigerators have thermometers built in.
Already, yeah.
And we thank you for calling us, Donald. We have somebody who thinks he knows the answer to the question, Dave from Bergen County, New Jersey. You want to read the question again, Larry?
Sure. Yeah. What is the name of the porcupine-looking drum roller used in construction to compact loose surface clay, soil, or fill?
And what do you say it is, Dave?
We refer to it as either a sheep's foot or lamb's foot roller.
I have to tell you that Normally, I try to put the incorrect answers on first to build up a little bit of excitement.
Mr. Radio Man.
There were no wrong answers.
Everyone had the right answer?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, that's awful.
You have to get tougher next month.
We were tougher for 1 month of 3 months.
Yeah, well, this one was too easy. Dave, how did you know?
I'm a landscape contractor.
Oh. Okay.
The other guy probably
was,
too.
I like having landscape contractors listening to us.
Yes.
Well, what are you going to give Dave?
Save energy, save money by
Alvin Ubell and
George Merlis.
George Merlis.
And Dave, I'm going to put you on hold. One of my producers will talk to you. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you for calling and winning.
Yeah, I want to just talk about, the question about the refrigerators keeping things green. And actually today I did an inspection in Greenpoint, and across the street was a little Vespa scooter shop, and I walked in just because I like to look at that sort of stuff. And in there he had an electric bicycle, and he said, "You want to take it out for a test drive?" And I said, "Sure, why not?" And I took out this bicycle. Now, I'm an avid cyclist, road bike, do 20, 30 miles at a time. And I tried this bike, and though for me it probably wouldn't work great, but for as a commuter bike, and I went and saw this thing, and you plug it in, it gives you 20 miles of, if you don't pedal, it gives you 40 if you do. And I think it's called an A to B. I was just... because I think that what the mayor is doing, trying to get more bicycle lanes here in our city, is a great thing. And
we even have a bike room here at WMIC.
And I think that's part of the plan that the mayor has to do, is actually mandate bike rooms and parking for bicycles, so when people get to work, they have place to put their bicycles, because bicycles these days are not cheap. Yeah. I mean, this particular product is a little pricey. It's, I think, $2,700. You're certainly not locking that up to a meter outside.
Yeah. In Japan, they have a special parking
lot. You saw that electric parking lot?
Yeah, you put the bike in, and it's computerized. It takes the bike away from you.
And it files it in a file cabinet.
And then you come back with the card. It comes
right back to you. So I think that because they say that most people only commute maybe about 4 or 5 miles. I think this bicycle, because you're not pedaling as hard, you won't get to work sweaty, which will be terrible in the summer. So I think it's a great thing.
Lydia in Flushing left a comment on our show page. She said, "I'm replacing my asphalt tile roof on my single-family home and will have to replace everything, including plywood. Is there a green way to do that?"
A green way to do it, to make it more the biggest green thing that people could do is actually research where the materials are coming from. There are websites that do that you, if you can actually get the materials that are within 100 miles or so of your area, it's much, you will less of an impact on the environment. As far as the materials that are concerned, there are certain LEED certified people who can actually dictate and consult on what to do to make it more energy efficient and more green, and also to make the roof more. Because these days, also, I saw this new application of closed cell polyurethane spray-on insulation, which people have been putting into attic spaces and crawl spaces to increase the efficiency. I think that's also a way that they can go. But the biggest thing that people are doing is trying to reduce that carbon footprint by how far you have to ship these products.
Let's take another call. Mike from Fairlawn, you're on the air.
Hi. Question has to do with clogged drains or slow drains.
Mm-hmm.
Very often it's not actually the clogged drain, and you'll give me the right terminology, the pipe that goes up to the roof and balances pressure, is that correct?
Well, it doesn't really matter. That's the waistline. If a drain is running slow, it could be because there is what is known as a vent blockage, which is causing a negative pressure. But it also could be because the plumber put in too many short elbows. Instead of using a short elbow, they should have used a sweep, which is a longer kind of elbow in the system that permits the debris that follows the water to go flowing out.
Can I just ask a question? How old is this building?
It's a single-family home. It was built in the late 20s.
Okay, I have to tell you right now, I don't think it's the vent that's the problem. I think it's the pipes are old, because this kind of building was built with galvanized piping and with cast iron piping. And it wasn't like now if you buy no-hub cast iron, the inside of the pipes are smooth. They're actually coated with a layer of material to make it smooth and so the debris doesn't stick. Those pipes, stuff sticks all the time. I've taken out a couple of pieces out of my home, and my home was built in the 30s, and so much crud is stuck to the outer walls of the pipe. And I believe that you actually, because the thing is that
so he should just replace the pipes?
Right, because what he was thinking about the vent to the exterior doesn't really relieve the pressure, because actually the drain that you're looking at is relieving the pressure because air is following the water down. So I don't believe it's that. I think you actually just have old pipes, and they need to be cleaned out or replaced, and that's part of the problem. Especially a 20-year-old building. We're talking about 80-year-old equipment here.
Since we're talking about aging, George in Astoria asked, what's the lifespan of a 90-gallon water heater?
His
is from 1992. Thinks it's it needs replacing to avoid a leak. And he wonders if there are more efficient water heaters available on the market. What kind of efficiency is he looking for?
Well, I just wanted to say that with the fact that it's from 1992, I think he's gotten his money's worth out of it, because most of them only last 8 to 12 years. Okay. The second thing is, yeah, there are way more efficient units out there today, and there is the A.O. Smith is actually in the process of producing, I forget the name of this series, but a very high-end series, which is very efficient. There's also the controversy of tankless water heaters, which we've been discussing on, I've been discussing here, I've been discussing online with some of our listeners. And I just read a Consumer Reports article about it, and people should go to that article, where the problem is that, especially in this environment economy that we have, where people are kind of struggling, and if they're going to spend, it costs basically to replace a standard conventional water heater about $300 to $500 for the unit and about $300 to $400 to put it in by a plumber. The new units cost about anywhere between $6 and $1,000 for the unit, and you have to have a plumber. He just doesn't replace it. He has to mount it. He has to now plumb it in a new location, and he also has to get an electrician in there to wire in, because they all need electricity. Also, they say that there's sometimes a scaling problem with calcium in these units, so they may not be everything that they're written up to be, but I think they will come down in price as we import more of them. I think they are more efficient. They leave less of a carbon footprint on our environment. But it's really what you're talking about, a difference of about $800 for replacement cost versus almost anywhere between $1,000 and $2,000 for replacement costs. So you have to weigh those things out. And you're only going to pick up about 22% of efficiency versus a conventional.
We have very little time left, and a lot of people have called in or written in with really interesting questions. Mm-hmm. Some of them, I assume, are emergencies, mm-hmm. so they should get in touch with you directly.
Right. They can email me at larry@ubell.com, and if it really is an emergency, type emergency in the title of the
Ubell is spelled UBELL.
Yes.
And they should also put in a phone number.
They should definitely put in a phone number.
Because you'd prefer to call them to do a big email back
exactly.
and forth.
Exactly.
Yeah, we'll do it on radio, off radio, on radio.
And in the subject, put emergency if it really is an emergency.
I'm going to slip another call in here. Matt from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air. Can you make it quick?
Hi, Matt.
Yeah, hi. I'm on the verge of buying a house upstate, and I'm just wondering, I'm at the point of hiring the inspector, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering, should I go with the inspector that is being recommended to me by the realtor?
Well, let me ask you a question. Before I answer that question, what do you think?
It makes me suspicious.
Then you should go with your gut. Because you know what?
But then I'm just finding somebody out of the yellow pages, and I don't know who they are.
Well, how about you go with the American Society of Home Inspectors website, and that's ashi.org. And there, you know there's a level of certification there. You know there's a level of continuing education there. And that's what I would go with.
ASHI.
Right, .org. And they are the ones. So that way you're not just pulling someone out of the phone book. You know they have insurance. And you know, also make sure it's a licensed New York inspector. Ask them that question.
Great.
And that's the kind of thing. And before we sign off, I also wanted to talk about that my father is doing this talk over at Brooklyn AIA. Now, unfortunately, it's not open to the public, but it's about expert testimony and about how you – because my father has been before courts about a hundred times already.
You've been sued many times.
Over 100 times.
No, we help other people sue.
We
or defend themselves. We work both sides. We're not just a gun for hire on one side. We're going to hire everybody.
Do you know what an expert is? It's a drip under pressure.
expert.
But that, it really
that's
is
funny. I've never heard that, and I'm sorry I did now.
Now, I'm told that you'll be back on May 13th. Is that possible?
That's wonderful.
Yes.
Really, that soon?
That soon. And by then we'll recover.
No, don't rush it. Don't rush it yet, because we still have about 30 seconds to go. What do we do? We can't take another call?
No, we can't.
You have anything else you want to tell
me? One little quickie. Those people who have the water heaters, if they pick a copper wire and connect it between the hot and cold water, a heavy-duty copper wire, like a number 10 wire, the water heater will last twice as long.
And what about your clothes?
Come on, America. Go forth and fix, save energy money,
and do it safely.
The U Bells. Thank you so much. On tomorrow's show, Nobel Prize laureate Wangari Maathai offers her perspective on the problems facing Africa. Then, how the landmark Mabry versus Madison Supreme Court decision changed the course of American democracy. And former priest James Carroll examines the modern history of the Catholic Church, plus our latest underreported segments. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Alex Hotz and Drew Katchen. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow.